what a privilege it is to be here, you know, with you, and to be able to come back from and time to time and see new faces and get to know you. Really, thank you for these many years that we've been able to partner together. It's quite a privilege to do that. So thank you very much. I do want to share this morning from just something God's laid on my heart. I like the little guys in the Bible. The guys that, when you're reading through the passages, you kind of skip over them, and yet they don't have a big role to play, but it's there and it's important. And there's something to learn from them. And one of the privileges Denise and I have in that is we meet a lot of little people. Not height-wise, but just, yeah, they don't have a great story. They aren't writing books about them. They aren't making movies about them. They're not on TV, but they're doing something for Jesus. And I've learned to listen to them. Because in listening to them, I learned what God is doing. And God's doing some amazing things around the world. So I want to start by maybe going back on a story that you're familiar with. Jesus has been crucified, risen, gone to heaven. The disciples are there. Jerusalem, amazing things are happening. Just unbelievable things. I mean, they're seeing thousands of people saying, we want to follow this Messiah. We want to go with him. It's hard to believe that anything could go wrong. Where will this ever stop? And then it does. And if you read in Acts, it's going along just amazing things and the stories that are coming in and people are being told different things about this happened here or that happened there. Did you hear who joined our group and who it is? And it seems like pretty soon the entire city of Jerusalem will all be followers of Jesus. And after that, who knows where it can go from there? And then, like I said, it stopped. Because at some point in any kind of the things that are going on, it seems like when you get a really good growth, there's pushback that comes. And in the pushback that comes, things can stop. And while people were excited about what Jesus had done and what they were seeing God continue to do in the midst of them, it didn't take long for them to get scared. And one day, I don't know what kind of day it was, probably given Jerusalem, the sun was out, it was a blue sky, it was there, Stephen was pulled outside the city and stoned. And that changed things. And if you read the passage in Acts, I'll just read a little bit of it, it said that while they're doing that, meanwhile the witnesses laid their clothes at the feet of a young man named Saul. We hadn't heard about him up till now. He was a young guy. We find out later as you go through, his name gets changed to Paul. We know we hear a lot about him and all of that, but well-educated. Great teachers growing up. Had all the right pedigree that he needed to move up in society and to move forward. And yet he found at this particular event, as things were changing for the Christians, that he was the keeper of their clothes. And Saul was there giving approval to his death. And on that day, a great persecution broke out against the church at Jerusalem, and all except the apostles were scattered throughout Judea and Samaria. It changed. People were afraid. And well, the day before, without knowing it, the excitement was there, the freedom to do what they were doing. They were sharing with their neighbors, and they were so excited about being part of God's family, and then they're gone. And Saul, as he was known at that point in time, his career kind of takes off. It says that he went from door to door, dragging people out of their homes who were identified as Christians, doing all kinds of things to them. And it was the religious leaders that had gave him the approval to do this. Saul went from being a young man watching people's jackets, if you would, while they were stoning someone, to being at the very center of it. to pushing back against God, that if there was a scary person for the Christians at that point in time, it would have been the mention of the name Saul. There's people like that around the world today. We had people in a country in Southeast Asia got into an area that on the island where they were, it was known to be not only partly Christian, but the southern part was Muslim. And not just Muslim, but radical Muslim. And there was a man there who was known for, in his group of essentially terrorists, of terrorizing, like Saul, the Christians. He carried a club. He'd been known to beat Christians to death with the club. This family that we had moved into that area, been there about a month. One day when they were out outside their house in the jungle, they came across, not knowing that that man was there, they came across some of the men from his group. Two little boys, mom and dad, Christians. The men invited them to come to their camp. They knew better than to do that, and so they headed back to their home, but these men followed them, and then when they returned to their home, they found that very quickly the rest of the group had arrived from that terrorist group and had surrounded, essentially 100 men with machetes, had surrounded their home. Story goes that things were happening. They tried to set the house on fire. It hadn't rained for a month, and it started to rain. God's still in control. Two policemen showed up versus 100 men with machetes with a known record. And somehow, because people were praying, they were put in a van and hustled out of that neighborhood, followed by these people on motorcycles and such, and got down and were put into a hotel room under arrest with no windows and never knowing what the knock on the other door would bring. At that point, Denise and I were in another country, which I, in Asia, and it was about midnight. I won't tell you what country we were in, but it's very large and they all speak Chinese. And midnight, the phone call rang, my cell phone rang. And if it rings at midnight, and the voice on the other end I recognized, but he said, "Marty, you might want to know this." And at which point I was fully awake because I knew I wanted to know that. So what would happen with his family? I could talk to him by phone. We wanted to get them out, but you know what their vision was? It wasn't just to get out of there. So we want to come back to this country. So we were trying to get them out of there, but we were also trying to get them out of there so that they weren't deported out of there and could go back to another place. We pulled in everything that we could from the U.S. Embassy to everything else. It was starting to go viral around the world. And then God reached down and changed hearts. Move people. The family got out, and Denise and I were able to debrief them in another Asian country and hear their story and how God worked with them. And then the exciting thing was that it was about a year later, we were in another part of that country on another island where they had moved over there, and they're still sharing the gospel. What looks to us like a very difficult situation, God is still in control. When you watch the news on TV and you see the world reports of all the things that are going on and you know, the wars and all the other stuff, I would challenge you to pray for that. Because my experience says that there are Christians in those areas. Very much probably like these Christians in Jerusalem and other parts of that part of the world at that time. Or like that family on that island, whose lives are threatened. The very witness of Jesus looks like it'll come to an end, but God somehow does some amazing things, and it doesn't. So then you get the story, which you're probably familiar with. If you've heard it here, you've heard, your children have heard it in Sunday school, wherever it is, Saul is going to Damascus. He's taken his little dog and pony show from Jerusalem out there, and he's going to do everything he's doing in Damascus. And on the way there, God speaks to him and blinds him through the light, and he ends up in a home with no sight. It says he didn't eat or drink for 3 days. And he's wondering where his life would go. And then you come to Acts 9 and verse 10. And it says, in Damascus, there was a disciple named Ananias. It doesn't say he was the bishop or the pastor or the elder or a leader. In Damascus, he was a follower of Jesus. He was a disciple. He was simply, the word disciple means learner. He wasn't anybody who came with a resume that was amazing, that people looked at and said, we have got to go talk to Ananias. Ananias knows this or that. Ananias was a leader. We don't know any of that. All it says is that he was a disciple, a learner. He was a member of the followers of Jesus. And then it says, the Lord called to him in a vision. I don't know how that happens. I haven't had that. I don't know if he was sleeping at night and he woke up and God called him and had a vision like happened in the Old Testament to some people. I don't know if it was during the day he was sitting around doing whatever his work was. We don't know what that was either. I don't know what he was doing. But God said, Ananias. And he says, yes, Lord. He answered. Now, in some translations of the Bible in English, it says, yes, Lord, and it has a little exclamation mark. Okay, that's not in the original languages. They didn't have exclamation marks like that. But how would you feel if God came to you and said, and called your name? Would you be excited? Yeah, that'd be pretty exciting. I'd be a little afraid, too. That's usually why when an angel of God shows up, it says, first thing they say is, do not be afraid, and then they go into whatever else they got. Because I think we'd be afraid, but he's pumped. He's ready, whatever it is. Except he didn't know what God was going to ask him. And then in the next verse, the Lord told him, go to the house of Judas on Straight Street, and asked for a name from Tarsus named Saul, for he is praying. And in a vision, he has seen a man named Ananias come and place his hands on him to restore his sight. Okay, now as he heard that unfold, if somebody's giving you directions to go someplace, you can kind of figure it out if we give you a street name here in Tahoe and said go here and go to that house. Damascus wasn't a huge place, but everybody knew the street named Straight. In fact, if you go to Damascus today, don't recommend it, but it's if you go there, the street named Straight is still there. It was a major street in Damascus, 50 feet wide, big meeting halls on both places. Before malls, that's what it would have been, is the place where people went. Everybody knew that street. It's about a mile long. And the house of Judas, probably one of the more prominent Jewish people in the city of Damascus, was there. So as he heard this, he's going, yep, know where that is. Yep, know where that is. Yep, okay, Judas's house. Yep, I know that one. Been there, been by it many, many times, never been inside. Guess I'll go see it. I know where it is, until he gets to the part where he says he asked for a man from Tarsus named Saul. And if there was anything that happens in the pit of his stomach, that's when the acid would begin to churn. Because Saul at this point, even though Damascus is over 100 miles from Jerusalem, the news was out. And in fact, I would suspect among the believers, who Ananias we assume was one of them, the word was that Saul was coming. And what he had done in Jerusalem to other believers, maybe people they even knew. The stories in over 100 miles, stories as they tend to do, would probably grow. But they were expecting the worst. And while he was asked, God saying, God, I will do anything. Yes, and that's why the exclamation mark at the very end. Except, God, are you serious? I mean, look what he says. And I love this because we respond the same way. So the Lord tells him to do all this. And in 13, this is what Ananias says. And I don't know, you know, it's kind of flat when you just read it black and white words. But he kind of like, Lord, I heard many reports about this man and all the harm he's done to your saints in Jerusalem. And he has come here with authority from the chief priest to arrest all who call on your name. God, I know you're sitting up in heaven, but maybe you haven't read Jerusalem Today recently. Okay? Because let me update you a little bit about the guy you're asking me to go see. As if God didn't know. Now, I know that neither you nor me have ever done that with God. Okay? God, I don't think you got the full picture here. God, there's a little bit more you need to know, because doing what you're asking me to do right now, let me translate this from the original languages. I know it said, Lord, and I've heard all these reports. This is my translation of what Ananias said to God. Are you crazy? Anything but that. My relatives were in Jerusalem, and now they're living with me because they had to flee from there. And all the excitement they had about serving God just went out the window. And that happens to us. Scott, I get excited when I'm in church, or I hear some things, or I'm in a study or in a small group or whatever it is. I'm pretty excited about the potential of doing something for God, whatever it would be, even if it was small, even if it was something personal I need to do. I'm excited, and then it comes out of actually what it entails, and it's like, gosh, I don't know. That might be a little hard. My first point is that God always prepares a way. God always prepares a way. You and I may not know it, but God has prepared a way. He never asks us to do something, to respond to him positively without knowing where the future's going. And that what we need to do can change the future. I read something this last week. It was pretty interesting. It said, you know, okay, so this is for all you kind of like Trekkie nerds and all that stuff. And when you go time travel, people are always concerned, well, you go back in time, you might change something, and then it would change the present, you know, you wouldn't, whatever it would be. But very few people are worried about what we would do today would change the future. Kind of the same thing, isn't it? But what God is asking us to do today will change the future. What he was asking Ananias to do would change the future. And we may not know it, and we may never see it. I was in a country in East Africa, and we were traveling, and there was a guy who went in with a World Venture, one of our missionaries. He's telling me this story. He said, well, when he went there, he didn't even know how to connect people, and actually went to what was called Old Town. It was a part of town where nobody ever went, where actually foreigners had been killed and all that. And he was a soccer player, so he just kind of hung out at the dirt field where all the guys would be playing soccer. And after weeks of this, eventually they ask him to play soccer with him. And he turns out he's pretty good. So then he gets to all this relationship, and they ask him to play on his team, and they're doing all that. And then he's thinking, this is a dirt field with rocks and all of those kind of things. And boy, what could we do to reach out? How could I develop this into a way of reaching out? Now, he didn't go there with the idea that, you know, I don't know when you hear the word missionary, what you think, okay? There's all kinds of missionaries. But I don't think he went there saying, you know what, I'm going to be a missionary by playing soccer on a dirt field. That's it. as things developed with his soccer thing, God opened doors, said, that's where I want you to go, what you want to do. Found out that about a mile from there, along the best strip of land, it's on an island, another island, and the absolute best strip of land, the most expensive land in that whole entire city. About 25 years ago, the president of the company, this sounds bizarre, but the president of the country gave to the mission a plot of land on that best road in the whole area. Now, you can't build a church there because of the religious environment there, but you could put a soccer field in. And he's got someone here in the United States who will pay to put in a grass soccer field with lights and everything else, and they're going to change the way they do ministry because they're reaching young people because he went there and said, God, whatever. Whatever you want to do, God prepares a way. Before he was probably out of elementary school, God moved the president of a country to give us a plot of land that someday when he got there would be used for a soccer field to reach people for Jesus Christ. God always prepares the way. I remember after an earthquake in, again, a Southeast Asian country, we went into the area, as we often did, for disaster relief and such, and we were there within a couple days. It was a lot of fun. We fly a lot, but this I knew this runway is a short runway, and because of the earthquake, it had buckled a little bit. So when you landed, not only did they have to put the brakes on, reverse the engines pretty quickly, but you were doing this thing as you went along. And so you just wanted to get there, and then as you arrive at the terminal, most of it's fallen down because of the earthquake, so you're wondering what you're getting yourself into. And guy who was there with me said, I want you to go meet this guy. And when I looked on the map and I'd ask about the area where the earthquake had hit the hardest, because I knew that there were a lot of churches there. There was actually quite a large seminary and training program was there. I said, tell me about the area. And he said, you know, in this area, well, there's churches like that. There are absolutely no believers. We tried to start a church there. We put up a building. You can imagine this happening this morning. That, of course, it wouldn't be like this. They have windows and such. But while we're trying to have service, they'd come every Sunday and throw rocks and break the windows, and the rocks would come inside. And so we eventually gave up on that. But I want you to meet a young man. And so we drove into this area, into a village, and then you had to stop and park the car where you could. And most of the houses are made out of bricks, but they put a lot of mortar in between. So when the earthquakes come, then the mortar gives away and it all falls down. So you walk over the rubble of the bricks. It's easy to rebuild. And you walk down to a little hut, really is a grass hut, kind of raised off the ground. And the size, the floor spacing was about the size of a king-size bed. That was their whole house. Young man. His wife and very young child. He was a Muslim, but several weeks before, he had told this person, he said, I had a vision that someday I would be a Christian missionary. Now, how crazy is that? I mean, you're talking about one of the more radical areas. You're talking about you can't have a church here because they throw rocks in it. And now you're talking about an individual who is a Muslim believer who says that I had a vision of Jesus and I know, I'm not there yet, but I know that I'll be a Christian missionary. God always prepares a way. Through the earthquake, he became a believer. And he said, now my role is to take the message and tell others about Jesus. That happened. God was preparing the way. But you know, it's Ananias didn't know that. He said, all I know is this guy's a very scary guy. And I go knocking on that door and I go inside there. I don't know if he's blind. I haven't heard the stories about that yet. But whatever has happened, there's a good chance that even the owner of the house will want to kill me. And I can imagine that somewhere in there, he made a decision in his mind and says, okay, whatever. Whatever it costs, I will do it. That had to be the longest walk of his life. to get over to the street called Straight, to walk by there, kind of nervously, kind of, I would assume, shuffling his feet as he walked along, not wanting to get there too soon, because maybe something would happen and it would all change. But getting there to the door and kind of raising his hand like he wanted to knock and just not sure. And he knocks and he opens the door. And somewhere in that walk, there was a change. Because it says, when he gets in there, I mean, God said, go. And I think one of the things that when God said, go, it's interesting. God says, this man is my chosen instrument to carry my name before the Gentiles and their kings and before the people of Israel. And I will show him how much he must suffer for my name. And when he heard that part, okay, this guy's been knocking us off left and right, but he's going to suffer. Yes, I'll go. You know, he's going to, I will. This is payback time. And then Ananias went to the house and entered it. And placing his hands on Saul, he said, and this is the amazing transformation. From probably less than 30 minutes previously being deathly afraid of this guy, he gets to the house, he goes in, and he puts his hands on his eyes, and he says, Brother Saul. He saw him in a completely different way. And that's one of the challenges for us, is to see the world in a completely different way. To see the challenge that Denise and I have to go around is in constantly asking myself, what does God see here? And my prayer is, God, let me see what you see. I don't want to see what I see, because, man, I see a lot of stuff here. But I want to see, and I don't see a lot of hope. I don't see a lot of possibilities. But God, what do you see here? Denise and I were in West Africa just recently, about 7 hours road north of the capital, off of the coast, up into a remote area, and there is what we call an unreached people group. Now, unreached people group means that the gospel might be there in a small way, but basically these people have never heard the gospel. They don't have an opportunity to hear the gospel. They don't have the Bible in their language. If there are believers, it's a very small handful. And they said, this is an area that we want to go in, and we want to take you up there, but it'll be a very interesting trip as we go up there. So it was another probably 45 minutes to an hour to get on this, one of the roughest roads I've ever been in. Took the bumper off the back of the vehicle that we were in, trying to get over all the things that were there. And when we got there, then you stop at the end, and then it's another 45-minute hike up the hill, through the jungle up to this village. We got to the village. It clings to the side of the hill, and one of the things they said to us is that while you are in the village, there are certain areas where you cannot go. First of all, we've got to go to the village elders, and we've got to get permission to be here and to walk around and to talk to them. But then this particular village, outside, you may see it, but it's on the other side. Only the people of this village, of this people group, are allowed to go there. They go in and back in, and they worship a python. So there's a snake there. We can't go in. We can't see all this. Not that I was real excited to see that anyway, but it was kind of like a... it's okay. So we're walking around and meeting and no believers. Not one. And we came up on the side of it was down the side of a very steep valley surrounded by jungle. And we were at the top so we could look over the whole thing. And one of the leaders asked me a question. He said, we have no toilets here. So looking out here, how many toilets do you, we want to put toilets in, and how many toilets do you think we need, communal toilets? So I drew on all my seminary classes and, you know, that how many toilets do each village and such. And I looked around, and with my best guess, I said, well, I think probably you could get started. I would guess there's probably 300 plus people in the village. I said, I think you could start with three and, you know, place them. He says, okay, good. That's what the UN said when they were here. And I'm going, oh, good. It's kind of like I'm with the UN on this one. But And then I saw across the village on the other side a whole row of women walking down a path. You could see them kind of coming out of the jungle. I said, well, where do they come from? The fields? Or I couldn't see the fields. They said, no, this is a women actually worship another snake, but that's only the women can go and see that snake and not the men. The other ones everybody can go to, but that's theirs, and they're coming back from worshiping that. It's a very, very dark area. You could feel the oppression that was there. So I tell you that to tell you the next thing. On the way back, walk back down the 45 minutes, coming back down the hill. There is, quite a ways away, but there is another very small, the only church among that people group. And the leader of that said to me, he said, would you be willing to preach tomorrow at our service? That was Saturday, so the next day was Sunday. And I said, sure, happy to do that. So went back to where you're staying, back off that road. Then we went in the next day, and it was probably, I don't know, 45 minutes, an hour on another dirt road. That was a little better. I get to this little brick building. If you've ever been in tropical countries, very typical, no glass, open windows with bars, open rafters, tin roof, all of that. The way they work it out, all the men sat on one side, all the women sat on the other side. There weren't a whole lot of them. Maybe, I don't even know the number of people were there. But very interesting thing that they do there. I don't know, John, you guys want to start this up for what you do in worship service, but we all sat up front. The pastor sat with behind a desk, and then we sat on either side. And then when the worship band would go, they'd just keep going and going and going and going. And when it was time to stop, he had a little bell and he'd ring it. Then they'd go to the next song. So I don't know, you might want to try that. Just see how it works. So then it was my turn to preach, and he translated for me, and it was a lot of fun preaching like that, and they're somewhat responsive. And then when I finished and sat down back up on up here, then they come up for the offering. It's up there, and everybody, you know, it's Africa, so everybody kind of dances up to the front, and then they drop it in, and then you dance back, and that was kind of cool to see. And then it was an announcement, so they give announcements at the end, and then they had two visitors, two women who were there. And they introduced him, and the one woman was there, was, I think, a believer. And the other woman said, I would really like to believe in Jesus this morning. So in front of the whole church, this is how they ended the service, they shared the gospel with her. And she said she believed, the pastor prayed, and then she prayed. Now, when she finished her prayer, all the people that were there in the congregation were getting up and moving very quickly to a small church, but they're moving very quickly to the back and pointing right above us. And as we looked up, and I should have checked this. I usually check in churches now when I go there. But there was and they didn't even know what it was, a white snake that was uncoiling and coming out of the ceiling, and would have dropped on us. And I could see it. You know, it's like a rattlesnake or something. It has a little diamond head thing, so it was very poisonous. And I should have checked this morning, but that most interesting service I ever seen, because all of us then got out of that area, and you know, then we had sticks and stones flying, and we ended the service killing a snake, and so it was kind of like a little different. But the interesting thing was, talk about God preparing the way. You see, for that culture where they worship snakes, the pastor said to her, remember this in your life, because things will get hard. Remember this. God today showed that he's more powerful than the snakes that your people worship. And this one, they'd never even seen this kind of a snake before. And these people work in the fields and all the other stuff. So where it came from and why it hung out the whole service up in the rafters, I don't know. But it came down at that point. And it was very powerful what God wanted to show them and impress upon us, too, what he's doing. Well, Ananias goes, lays his hand on him. Saul changes his name to Paul, becomes quite a preacher for Jesus. In fact, but news doesn't travel real fast. So when he gets back to Jerusalem, nobody wants to meet him. None of the Christians who are even around want to meet him. They're still afraid of him. And the other thing, not only does God prepare the way, he knows how hard it's going to be. You ever tried to share Jesus with a friend or a family member or a coworker? Boy, were they excited you finally did that, weren't they? Yeah, that was right where they wanted to hear. It's hard. People around the world are counting the cost. We were in Vietnam meeting with some pastors. I can believe the testimony. The pastor said, this is a weird country there that they got going, but he said, the police came to me and said, we're going to arrest you tomorrow, and we're going to put you in jail for 15 years. And he goes, I couldn't do 15 years because I got church here and stuff. Yeah, okay. So then he escapes by boat. There's a whole exciting story about that. Over into Cambodia, hangs out there until, and this is really weird, the police come back and said, look, if you'll come back to the country, we'll only put you in jail for 3 years, and for being a Christian, then you can get out, and it's no problem. So he says, I can do 3 years. So he went back and did 3 years and then is out. Had to count the cost. Was it take? God not only prepares the way, but what does it mean? I mean, we were in Nepal after the earthquake that happened there, and hearing the testimonies and stories, there are places in Nepal where people are taking the gospel today, where not only is it, it takes 21 days to hike into some of these locations, and then you're at 21,000 feet. You're up high. And, this is election season. I'm not going to talk about that, but I'm going to say that, in other parts of the world, God prepares different people. He knows it's going to be hard. He says, one night, high elevation, way up in the mountains, I'm doing a Bible study, and all the high schoolers, they come over, and they've just got tin roofs on stone around there, and they're throwing the rocks on, so we could hardly hear it, and they're throwing it on the roof. We didn't know what they were going to do. But he said, I make friends with everybody. So I called up the local leader of the Communist Party. This is not our normal church planning approach to call the Communist Party, but he called him up and says, Lee, I got these high school guys over here, and they're throwing rocks. Could you do anything in this village? He was kind of scared for his life. So sure enough, the leader of the Communist Party comes over and gets the high school boys and takes them to another hut. Again, I don't recommend this, and gives them all free beer and gets them drunk, and they could finish their Bible study. But as soon as it was over, they left. But it's scary. But God not only prepared the way, he knows how hard it's going to be, he prepares a way out of it. God knows the end, but you don't. God says, I've got something for each of you. And it might be that some of you are well-known leaders and all this. Some of you are Ananiases. In fact, I suspect most of us are Ananiases. We're just simply learners, followers of Jesus. God says, you don't know what I want you to do, to go down to that street called Straight, to knock on that door and go into the greatest fear in your life and put your hands on him, call him brother, and see what I'm going to do. When we first went to Japan, there was a high school student came to the camps that we were running. Pastor's son. And then he went to college, then he went on. He actually became a pastor later on, a very small church in a very remote area. And then at one point, while we were in Japan, I was asked to sit on with the Japanese pastors as they were forming. They were excited to say, we've got to send out our own missionaries. So they formed their own mission agency. And I helped do that, and I helped be on that. And the very first missionary they appointed was this guy we knew in high school. And they sent him to Peru. And last year, Denise and I were in Peru. And what an exciting to see. We met him in high school. We saw him grow up. We saw him do this. And now we see God using him as a missionary. I never anticipated when we first saw him that's how it would end up. I didn't know the end, but God does. And when that's the case, it's amazing what you can do. That's what Ananias had to do. God, I don't know how this is going to turn out. I may well be like Stephen. I may well be a martyr. But you've called me, and I'm going to walk down that street. I'm going to do what you asked me to do, no matter what the cost. And that's what it takes today. 86% of all Hindus, Buddhists, and Muslims in the world today do not know a Christian. How are they going to hear? There are 7 billion people roughly in the world today. 2 billion have never heard the name of Jesus Christ. How are they going to hear? My challenge to you this morning is this, that what is God saying to you, Ananias, that you never expected? And whether it's finally getting up the courage, and it does take courage, to go to your neighbor or your coworker or whoever it is and begin the conversation about Jesus Christ, or if he calls you to a jungle with snakes in Africa, whatever it is, are you willing to say, I'm willing to count the cost? Because, one, God has prepared the way for you. God knows what the cost will be, and he knows the end, even if you don't. And we love to know where this is going, and that's not always the case. So what might God be saying to you this morning? About a family member, like I said, or a neighbor, or a coworker, or somebody else? That you will be the person, you'll be the Ananias in their life. That's my challenge. You got to take it from there. I'd love to talk to you. You guys do amazing work here. I know that. And it's always exciting to come back to see that. We've been partners for a while. Looking forward to ongoing partnership. But I'm looking forward to seeing what God will do through you, Ananiases, of South Lake Tahoe. Let's pray. God, I thank you for this morning. Thank you that we can come here freely. We have no rocks coming through the windows. We can worship here, Lord. It's just amazing. What a privilege. And God, I thank you for this church, for the individuals who are here. I thank you for the people who are already stepping out like Ananias and doing things. And Lord, I know you want to do more through people. So I just challenge people. Give them the courage and the guts just to do the things that you want them to do. Lord, we're just like Ananias. I mean, when we actually get the job description, it can be a little scary. So we need your help. Lord, you used Ananias to touch Paul once. And Paul made a huge difference all throughout that part of the world. God, help us to touch a life that would do the same. In your name I pray. Amen.